Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Robin McKean, and all the hosts for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics, right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Hercules Invictus and Athena Victory celebrate the mythic impulses of ancient Greece and Rome, and they invite you to celebrate with them. Welcome to Voice of Olympus.
Greetings, this is Hercules Invictus.
And Athena Victory.
Welcome and thank you for joining us on Voice of Olympus on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Tonight's episode is part of our Olympian Path series. Olympian Path introduces people to the multiple paths of Olympianism in the world today. And we have as guest Chris Aldridge of the Temple of the Greek Gods. Welcome, Chris. Thank you for being on tonight's show.
It's an honor. I'm glad to be here.
So, Chris, what began your Olympian journey?
Oh, that's a loaded question. I think I've had an interest in Hellenism and ancient Greek religion from a very early age. I think that my first introduction to ancient Greece actually came from the series Mighty Mouse, interestingly enough.
Really?
When I was a kid, I don't remember, I think it was the New Adventures of Mighty Mouse, and I've never seen this episode listed on the official archive, so it may have been one that they decided to throw out, but when I was a kid, I remember watching it, and I was a big fan of Mighty Mouse, and there was this one episode centered around ancient Greece, Queen Pearl of Athens, and it was centered around ancient Greece, and Oil Can Harry was from the Isle of Selenia. And they incorporated the Trojan horse and all the things that they didn't mention the Greek gods, I don't think, but all the things that Mighty Mouse did to defeat Oil Can Harry, all of the obstacles and feats that he did, they took that and created the Olympic Games out of them. And so the story behind the cartoon was that, you know, Mighty Mouse created the Olympic Games, and that was my first introduction to ancient Greece.
So they're making Mighty Mouse Hercules.
Yeah, it was. But I didn't really think that much of it at the time because I was just a kid. But then in high school, in ninth grade, we watched The Odyssey, which was a 90s movie. Yeah, it was. I think it was a series that was compiled into a movie. It was made in 97, I think. And it was a great movie as far as reflecting The Odyssey. And that got me really interested. And from that point, I had always had interest in ancient Greece throughout my time in school. And in 2004, I watched the movie Troy. And I watched the Gallery of the Gods section at the end of it. And I was able to learn so much, as far as mythology goes anyway, about the 12 Olympians. And from that point, I was pretty much hooked on my interest in ancient Greek religion. But I didn't really fully convert until around summer of 2009 when my wife and I moved in together, and we just had a really strong spiritual experience together, and we started following the Greek gods from there. And so that's basically the start of it.
That's awesome. In my life also, even though I'm Greek and I was raised with the mythology, it was the peplum films, those old sword and sandal movies that were usually made in Italy, that sparked my greatest interest. And there was a Hercules cartoon at the time, and several Popeye episodes where Popeye was either Hercules or Brutus was Hercules. And in those made a phenomenally strong impression on me and contributed just as much as the actual authentic material from antiquity. So I'm glad the popular culture is supporting the Olympians still.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
What started you on the particular religious path, you know, going from cartoons and movies? How did you make the leap into spirituality with the Olympians?
Well, in 2009, in summer 2009, my wife and I, we had a really strong spiritual experience together with the Greek gods, and we became basically, you know, Hellenic at that point. The next day, and we decided to, you know, follow the Greek gods and center our religion around that. I started off as, you know, pretty much a neo-pagan during that time.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really like the idea of Reconstructionism too much because, you know, I really wanted to do my own thing entirely. And I didn't realize at the time that you can still do that in Reconstructionism. As long as you do so within Hellenic standards, it doesn't mean that, you know, Reconstructionism doesn't forbid you from being an individual. They just think that if you're going to call your practice Hellenic, then you should base it on Hellenic structure. But I was a neo-pagan up until about 2015, I think, very recently. And I just decided to follow a more traditional path. I decided to become a Reconstructionist. I felt I resonated more with that. I felt that I was more connected to it. And I felt that the ancient Greeks knew best how to connect with the ancient Greek gods. I didn't really see any way I could go wrong from there. And from that point, you know, I've been very happy with my particular path.
The community is divided on that point, and I suspect it'll remain divided for a very long time. People following a more neo-pagan path, as you're calling it, and others trying to reconstruct the past. We don't currently have a stance on that because we encourage people to walk whatever path appeals to them as long as they're walking toward Olympus. But that is a problem. Do you encounter people in the community who have difficulty with the path that you've chosen?
No, not now. When I was a neo-pagan, I did. I got into a lot of arguments with Reconstructionists. But I think that to a certain extent, we're all neo-pagans. You know, some of us may be more traditional than others, and that's a good thing. But I think to a certain extent, we're all new because, you know, we're not doing, even Reconstructionists aren't doing everything exactly the same way it does and it was done in ancient Greece. I mean, during Panathenia, you know, we don't sacrifice 100 oxen anymore, you know.
Right.
And during aphrodisia, you know, we don't spread dove's blood on our altar or our shrine or our temple anymore, as far as I know. You know, so there's a lot of things that we've changed. There's progress that has been made. So I think that to a certain extent, we're all neo-pagans. But like I said, I follow more tradition. Hellenic Reconstructionism doesn't pretend to bring every single thing back to the into the current era. It just reconstructs it as much as modernly possible.
And that's a very sane way of looking at it. I've had Reconstructionists argue for having animal sacrifices, and they draw the line, though, at bringing back slavery and other such institutions that the ancients favored, which we don't today. Mm-hmm. Have you run into difficulty because you're not ethnically Greek?
No, I haven't.
That raises the community on occasion.
Yeah, I know that there's some people like that. Well, I mean, in the Kemetic community, there's people who think that you can't be Egyptian unless you're black. And I really don't understand that either, because not all the Egyptians were black. But as far as ancient Greece is concerned, as far as being ethnically Greek, it's really interesting because even when I was a neo-pagan, even when I wasn't a Reconstructionist and I was, you know, still considered a Hellenic polytheist, but I was still doing things my own way, I actually found that the Hellenic Reconstructionists or the traditionalists who actually live in Greece today were actually far more tolerant of me than the ones who lived in America. I mean, I have a friend in Athens. I have a friend in Athens who's a traditionalist, and, you know, I was talking to him one time back during those days when I was a neo-pagan and everything, and he said, well, if you know anything about ancient Greece, you know that every city they practice differently.
Correct.
You know, so they never really had a problem with that.
That still comes up a lot, though, as I wend my way through internet Hellenismos. That always comes up. There's also a bunch of people who attack ethnic Greeks for having succumbed to Christianity several thousand years ago. And the very fact that I am Greek made me suspect amongst those people. And they told me I was a sellout because my ancestors became Christian. So that's a very interesting view that I encountered. I don't know if you've encountered that one. But it's fascinating because the Olympians have remained with us throughout Europe's history and into Americas. And the paths that it has taken have been extremely interesting, and I'm glad it's back in spirituality. But it'll take a very long time to sort through some of these issues. And also, as you yourself pointed out, the ancients did not all practice the same thing. There were variations within regions and within households as well. And they were very tolerant for the most part in terms of how you interpreted the gods. To some, they were very real as people. In others, they were concepts. In others, they were symbols and stories. And all of that was fine in antiquity. And I think it should be fine today as well.
Well, I mean, you know, I've always lived by the belief that, you know, I don't care what you believe or how you live as long as you don't bother me. I mean, that's how I live. As far as your comment about your ancestors and everything, you know, I really don't see how anybody alive today can be held accountable for anything that their ancestors did or that happened to people back then because, you know, we didn't have any control over that stuff. But I do think that there is sometimes, I haven't seen it speaking with the majority of Hellenists in Greece or America, but I do think that there is a natural kind of resentment toward, like, the Greek Orthodox Church because, you know, it would have been one thing if they had, you know, came in and just set up their own church and said, hey, if anybody wants to come to us, come to us. You know, that would have been one thing, but they didn't do that. They did everything they could to wipe out traditional Hellas. They murdered, raped, robbed, ransacked, pillaged, destroyed, sacked temples, everything you can think of, everything that the Christian church has today, they stole it from the pagans, basically. Now that doesn't mean that it's okay to, you know, for us today to, you know, try to hurt them or anything like that. I'm not trying to advocate any kind of violence or anything like that. I'm just saying that, you know, there is a resentment there in some places, and it's understandable.
Of course, yes, it is understandable, but from where we're standing, we don't focus on that too much because, you know, we're in a different time now and we need to move forward. So what happened, happened, and now here we are, and the spirituality has taken root in our culture, and even though it's manifesting in different ways, it appears to be thriving. So let's focus on that. And I do believe, and that's why I started this series, that we should have increased dialogue with each other so that even though we're all off doing our own thing, which I heartily believe, by the way, at least we're talking to one another and seeing ways in which we can work together. Because right now we're isolated pockets that are very small, and it really does not make sense to be fighting among the Hellenic community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. That was a point that I made back when I was a neo-pagan. I said that, you know, we all worship the same gods, and there's no scholar on this planet, there's no historian on this planet who would say that we don't worship the same gods, even if we do things differently. So infighting was inexcusable, just going to divide us.
Absolutely. How did you start the Temple of the Greek Gods? I remember you got some flack way back from some people that felt that you shouldn't be setting up a temple. I remember I was lurking in those because I was focused on other things back then. But I'm glad that you set it up, and I'm glad that it's still around. Can you tell us a little bit about how the temple came to be and what it's currently doing?
Well, I don't remember really receiving any flack for it, other than perhaps some, you know, Reconstructionists who felt that I wasn't being properly Hellenic or something like that. But about a year after my wife and I officially became Hellenic permanently, I just felt this really strong calling to establish a place of worship. And partially it was because, As a Hellenic neo-pagan, I was encountering some Reconstructionists, not a whole lot, but some of them, who really wanted to create a divide, who really wanted to exclude people. Even if they may worship the same gods, they really didn't want them to be called Hellenic. They really wanted to kind of make an exclusive kind of community. And so I wanted to create an organization where everybody who believes in the Greek gods, doesn't matter how you practice, You can come there and have a community. So basically, it was a non-denominational temple of ancient Greek religion, and that's one of the main reasons I created it.
Very much needed, and you know, very, very open. In antiquity, especially during the Hellenistic era, the people of the Mediterranean were interacting with each other, exchanging ideas and spiritualities and trade goods. So a lot of the divisions that people are trying to create now did not actually exist in antiquity. Mythology tells you that several colonies in Greece were made by Phoenicians or by Egyptians. So there wasn't this concept of one people, one piece of land. That's a modern concept that people were trying to foist on the ancients, I believe.
Yeah, I agree. And especially in the Roman times, it became a very, very much an eclectic empire. You had people who believed in the Greek gods. You had people who believed in the Roman gods. You had people who worshipped the Egyptian gods. Or you may have had people who believed in all three pantheons and worshipped all three sets of gods.
Very true. Do you currently have services? Is this a separate location? Is it in your home? Is it part virtual and part in your home? How is the temple set up?
Well, presently the temple has actual public events that we host. We only have two throughout the year, and that's Panathenia, which is a traditional Greek celebration, and also Journey of the Soul, or the Rite of Hades, which is coming up very soon. And we created it because, you know, around this time, you know, Halloween, Samhain, whatever people may want to call it, this time of the year in our country, where it's very much focused on, you know, interacting with the deceased. It's a very relevant, very strong kind of holiday. And so even within Hellenic Reconstructionism, you know, whichever country you live in, you know, you can incorporate legitimately the celebrations of that area in a Hellenic structure. And so that's what we did with the Rite of Hades. We basically took Halloween or Samhain or Day of the Dead or whatever you want to call it, and we made it Hellenic. And so those are the two celebrations that we hold throughout the year. It's kind of like, you know, one part of the year we do an ancient celebration, the other part of the year we do a modern celebration. And presently, other than that, you know, obviously we have a strong online presence. We have a very successful Facebook page. The address for the temple presently is my post office box, but we do have some grounds here at our house that are set up, that are built as sanctuaries and things like that. Like in my backyard, I have a sanctuary to Artemis. And so if anybody wanted to come there and pray to Artemis, wouldn't have a problem with it at all. So
awesome.
We do have physical as well as, you know, virtual presence.
And what is your vision for the Temple of the Greek Gods?
Vision. I would just like to see it continue to grow and thrive and be the great place that I know it is. I would like to also see eventually us be able to build permanently an entirely freestanding building and grounds for the actual temple itself to finally have an actual, you know, like a church, for example, to have an actual freestanding building that is the temple of the Greek gods.
That would be awesome. Do you also do events like local festivals or pagan events?
Well, you know, like I said, we have two major events throughout the year. We usually hold those events at like local Universalist churches and places like that, places where, you know, there's a real diverse environment of spirituality and a lot of people come to it. People have came to our events who are not specifically Hellenic, but still admire the Greek gods and have some, you know, Greek spiritual connections.
That is very awesome. And do you guys do any, like, other community outreach? Do you get involved in charitable projects or civic events?
Yes, we do. I'd like to get involved in a little bit more, but presently our most popular event is Demeter's Drive, and we have hosted that event. It's not an event, a charity, rather. It's a food charity drive, and we've had it since 2011, I think. And each year, when the harvest season starts, which is around September 20th or 21st, we gather up food donations, like canned and boxed foods. And on December 21st, which is the official end of the harvest season, the beginning of winter, we take all the food that we've collected and we donate it to a local food charity or a local food pantry. Last year we donated to the Stockton Food Pantry in Illinois, and they sent us a thank you card saying thank you Temple of the Greek Gods and all that. And that was, even though that was a very small kind of, you know, thank you, it really felt good because, you know, you had a town that was acknowledging our existence as a legitimate religious organization. So
correct.
It felt really good to do those things.
Yeah, I applaud you for that. And part of what I perceive the problem to be with some of the non-standard faiths is that people have a lot of misconceptions about them. And they don't want to draw attention to themselves. So in this cloud of ignorance, people project very negative and dark things. And in turn, people from alternate or fringe spiritualities project those things onto the greater culture. And not that there is no darkness, but a lot of it is darkness that we're projecting by keeping apart and not getting involved and not letting people see that we're part of the community.
Yeah, I do think that's unfortunate. And, you know, I think things are a lot safer now than they used to be. I mean, you know, when we set up the temple in Thomasville, North Carolina, my hometown, back in 2011 to 2012, you know, even though it was a very conservative state, a Republican state, and, you know, we had our own house and our own grounds for the temple, our own worship room that people could come to. We were very open. We were incorporated into the state. And we were the only physical polytheistic temple to ever exist in the history of the city of Thomasville.
Awesome.
But even then, you know, nobody bothered us. You know, nobody assaulted us or threatened us or anything like that. The most I ever encountered was just, you know, a guy going door to door passing out Bible tracts like he would do to anybody else. But other than that, you know, nobody ever bothered us. I think it's a lot more tolerant than it is now. I think it's a lot more tolerant now than it used to be. I think that, you know, 50 years ago, we'd have probably been ran out of town. You know, somebody would have, it wouldn't have been legal for them to do that to us, but, you know, the law doesn't always stop nut jobs from hurting you. So there would have definitely been more danger back then, I think, than there is now. And I think that we also now reside in a very tolerant area. But still, there are people and religions and churches who say horrible things about people who are not Christian, not just pagans, but anybody who's not Judeo-Christian. And so there is a fear there. Fear is still there, I think. I think that a lot of people who follow, you know, the pagan religions or the polytheistic religions or the non-Christian religions, you know, they ask themselves a lot, will I lose my job over this if people find out? Because, yes, it's illegal to fire you for your religion, but the thing is, you got to prove that's why they fired you. So, you know, a lot of people ask themselves, will I get fired over this? You know, will somebody, like, break out my car windows for this? Will they try to burn down my house? You know, will they egg my house? Will they attack me? And so there is still a little bit of fear there, and it's understandable why some people would want to, you know, keep to themselves. I went to a general pagan gathering in Rockford, Illinois, when I first moved up here, and I asked if I could take pictures of the gathering and everything, and they said no, we'd appreciate it if you wouldn't, because, you know, some people have really sensitive jobs. And I said, that's completely understandable. So, unfortunately, there is still a little bit of fear there. It's understandable. But I do think it's getting better, and I have hope that in the near future, you know, that kind of really silly and petty prejudice won't exist anymore.
And I hope so as well. We're running out of time for the segment, so I'm going to have you back on to speak about your books. But you are an author, and you've written two books, Theseus, His Life, Mysteries, and Virtues, and The New Prayers of Old Hellas. Where can people look into these books and order them?
You can go to my website, chrisaldridge.net. That's chrisaldridge.net. And you just go to Books and Publications. And when you go there, you'll see a list of, well, you'll see pictures of the books, and you click on them, and it'll take you right to my bookstore. They're also Theseus. The Theseus book is also available through all major book distributors like Barnes & Noble. And you can also find in the right-hand column of that page on my website a list of the magazines I've been published in and things like that.
And you can also find out about your temple on the webpage as well, I'm assuming.
That's right. On my website, if you go to Clergy and Public Services, underneath my profile picture, you'll see a link to the temple. You'll see a little Facebook icon, and you just click on that, and you'll go right to it. And from there, you can also go to our website.
And what future projects are coming up? You're doing a lot of wonderful things. Is there anything that's going to be introduced in the near future that we should know about?
Yes, actually. I am finishing up my second prayer book. It's called Light of Olympus, Prayers and Rites for Everyday Life. And I hope to have that out by the end of the year at the latest. And I'm also working on a fictional piece that it was just an idea that came into my head, and it's a really good story. I don't want to reveal too much about it, but I don't normally write a whole lot of fiction, but the fictional story I'm working on really has a strong ancient Greek base to it, and so I hope that that's going to be out really soon, probably the first half of next year, hopefully.
And the last question, what need do you feel that the Temple of the Greek Gods fills? Like, what do you believe that Hellenism offers to people?
The first question, I think that the Temple of the Greek Gods offers a very tolerant and accepting atmosphere to people. If you believe in the Greek gods and, you know, you're looking for a community who's going to support you and be there for you, you know, no matter how you worship the Greek gods or what path you follow, you know, we have people who are Reconstructionists, we have people who are neo-pagans, we have Hellenic Wiccans, you know, we have all kinds of people. And so I think that what the Temple of the Greek Gods will offer to people who believe in the Greek gods and who follow Hellenism is a very accepting and tolerant community who's going to accept them for who they are as Hellenists. The second question, what I think Hellenism has to offer to people, it's a very loaded question. I think that Hellenism is a very beautiful religion, and I think that it's one of the wisest religions ever known to mankind, because not only do we have, you know, the ancient Greek religion, which persisted throughout, you know, countless centuries and is still alive today, but Hellenism also built the Western free world. Almost everything you see in our society today either came from or was inspired by Hellenism. On the wall of the House of Representatives in Washington, D.C., there's faces of many kinds of lawmakers and philosophers throughout history. Two of those are Lycurgus of Sparta and Solon of Athens, two ancient Greek Hellenic polytheists. You know, the White House, the Supreme Court building, and most of our government and courthouse buildings look exactly like ancient Greek temples. I never really thought about that until I became a Hellenist. You know, most people in our society don't look at that and say, hey, that's an ancient Greek temple. They just say, well, hey, that's the courthouse in the town. They don't realize that that architecture came from ancient Greece. They don't realize how strongly Hellenism has built freedom and democracy and the principles of religious liberty and virtue and excellence and nobility and moderation and all the wonderful things that make a strong society and a strong human being.
Wow, very well said, Chris. I'm honored that you came on and grateful, and I look forward to having you on again.
I look forward to it, too. Thank you for having me.
Okay, joyous journeys. Athena, what song are we going to? Bye-bye, Chris.
Our midpoint musical interlude today is Dave the Bard, Antlered Crown, and Standing Stones.
And here we go.
Within the leaf, I'm the voice within the tree. I am boy, I am man, the face of the changing man. And I have been your constant guide from your caves on the mountainside. We have walked hand in hand. The birds sing to the dawn, and the land has awoken, and oh, my lady lays with me, and our love weaves a tapestry, eternal thread, unbroken. I am lover, I am father, I am in all of nature that is reborn every spring. Call of stag and cry of eagle, I am child of barleycorn, and I am the antlered crown and standing stone.
Life in all of nature. International Pagan Radio, a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week streaming radio station. We have informative Facebook page, interactive Facebook group, absorbing interviews with musicians, engaging shows with excellent hosts, and dynamic interviews with spiritual leaders. Come join us. We have the very best pagan music from around the world. We feature artists such as Dave the Bard, S.J. Tucker, Murphy's Midnight Rounders, Elaine Silver, Izon, Brian Hinkey, Robin Renee, Fawn, and so many more. All available for your listening pleasure 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We are also available on TuneIn Radio. So go to www.internationalpaganradio.com. It's all pagan, all the time.
You're listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Thanks for sticking around. And now, back to the show.
And we're back. This is Hercules Invictus.
And Athena Victory.
And this is Voice of Olympus on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Today we come full circle. We were guests on Terry and Robin's show around 7 months ago. And now they're guests on our show. And we're going to pick up where we left off on that show in terms of our conversation about interfaith dialogue. The Spiritual Unity Radio Network is a phenomenal service. It allows people with different religious voices to express themselves and to communicate with other people in the faith community, even though they have different faiths. So we're launching the Mount Olympus Interfaith Council, and who better to talk to than Terry and Robin? Greetings, Terry and Robin. How are you?
Over here.
Hey,
sorry about that. I clicked on the wrong button there. We're on the air now. Welcome. So, what I'd like to share with the audience is what birthed CERN. It's Spiritual Unity Radio Network, and it's an awesome thing. What led you to create this radio station?
Well, it started really with I had been doing a show on another network. Several shows over a 7-year time period. And at some point, I left that station, but I realized that I still had a message, and a lot of my message had for many years been talking about how all the manifestations of the divine are equally valid. And so, working with that, we launched the station. Started looking for people to join that were of different paths, different manifestations of the divine, different expressions of faith. Yeah, I'm hearing a little bit of feedback. I'm going to try to change over to a different.
We're playing with it here, too, to see what we could do.
I'm going to try something here. Hang with me.
Okay.
Sorry about that, folks.
Okay, is this any better?
Yes, that's a little better.
Okay. All right, I'm still hearing myself echo back, so I'm not quite sure what's causing
that. Is Robin on the other line, or should I put her back in the quiet room? Could that be the problem? Because I have that line open as well.
No, I don't think that's going to be the problem. We're in different rooms on different phone lines. So Robin, why don't you talk for a second? Let's see how it sounds.
Robin?
That would help if I was unmuted.
There we go.
Hi, how is everybody tonight?
Everybody's great. How about you?
I'm doing well. How is it sounding?
It's sounding a little crackly on this end. There are two lines for your telephone number.
Yeah, that's probably that happens sometimes.
Okay, should I close one of them or put it in the quiet room? You think that would help?
Terry?
Yeah, I completely chopped out there for a second.
Okay.
He's seeing me in the chat room twice.
Okay, how's that?
Well, you tell me, how's that? Is that better?
That sounds better on our end. How does that sound to you?
Is Terry in the quiet room now?
Okay.
is Terry still talking?
Okay, I'm going to drop out and try one more thing. Robin, you keep talking about Spiritual Unity Radio Network and our mission and such, and I'm going to try something else. I'll be right back.
Yeah, because so far we have an exciting radio show about technical difficulties.
Yeah, well, you know, we can edit this later. It's the magic of radio. Terry founded this or started the radio station with the concept in mind that everyone should celebrate their similarities, whatever spiritual path they belong to. We all have certain things in common. For example, every religion expresses in one way or another that we should treat other people the way we want to be treated. Every religion
mm-hmm.
expresses in one way or another love. We need to love our fellow humans and our animals and how we walk through our life. Either you have to go to confession or you believe in karma or, you know, you're worried about going to a horrible place after you die. There's always some expression about live a good life.
Okay, I'm back. How's
Hi.
This?
It sounds
that
a lot
sounds
better.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, Robin was doing a great job of expressing that. A lot of this came out of, about 2003, I think it was. I was on an airplane sitting next to the dean of theology of a Lutheran seminary. And we were talking about, he was on his way to a religious educators conference, and I realized somewhere in the trip that it was religious as in all religions. There were some Buddhists, there were Muslims, there were people of a variety of expressions of faith. And he and I talked about the core of every religion boils down to love to the divine, by whatever name you call it, and love your neighbor. And as long as you can grasp that, then the rest is extra. The rest is minutia. You know, I talk about, you know, everybody on the planet eats chicken. Imagine getting upset because somebody spiced it up differently. So with that thought in mind, Spiritual Unity Radio Network is about all of us celebrating our similarities, embracing the things we have in common, and then celebrating the diversity and the joy and wonder of all these different ways of expressing it. But let's not get wrapped up in the differences. Let's embrace the similarities. That's the whole concept of my ministry, of this station, and everything that I've done for 20-odd years.
That's an awesome tale, and I'm glad that it led to these actions because CERN is an excellent service, an excellent vehicle for doing just that. In antiquity, the Greeks and the Romans and many other ancient people, that's how they related to each other. They would look for the similarities in their belief systems, and they would equate their gods. It's like, all right, you got a muscle man god, that's Hercules. You got a goddess of wisdom and war, okay, that's Athena. You know, you have somebody with a lyre or some other musical instrument, it's Apollo. And they would make these comparisons and use that as a basis for initiating dialogue. So they, too, look for similarities. And they made equations between the similarities, and that was how they built a bridge to communication. So having that approach today, I believe, is very healthy.
Well, I mean, you mentioned bridge. Robin and I's ministry is called Little Stone Bridge Pathworkings. And that came out of a conversation where we were talking about tearing down walls using the materials that built the walls and instead build bridges. And stone walls, tear them down, build stone bridges, and build bridges across all these differences. And there's Little Stone Bridge.
Also, it only takes a little bridge to reach somebody else. It doesn't have to be big, magnanimous, you know, big, huge, you know, overpowering. It just has to be a little gesture, a small gesture of kindness, a small gesture of, you know, being able to relate to somebody. When Terry took me to Dubai a year and a half ago or so, I'm sitting, you know, in the airport and waiting to go through customs. And there are all these people there who speak all these different languages. Dubai International Airport is one of the busiest airports in the world. And there are people there from every country, every walk of life, every ethnicity, every way dressed imaginable that you could imagine. But there was this little kid who was spinning around in circles and making himself dizzy. And every human being has done that. And everybody there, regardless of race, color, creed, religion, was smiling and watching that little kid do that and remembering. So we were all having this common experience of remembering something we all did when we were little kids, and it took away the different clothes, the different skin color, the different religious beliefs. We were all just humans. And that we need to do that more and more. You know, you go to the zoo and you see a baby animal, everybody thinks it's cute. I mean, there are just so many things we can relate to each other on. We don't have to, you know, hold out our differences and say, well, I don't believe what you believe, so I can't be with you. But we believe more the same.
So you also do festivals. We've crossed paths. In fact, in your festival is where we all first crossed paths together. And we've crossed paths most recently at Ishtar Fest, now on the planning committee. How extensively does your ministry extend into different gatherings?
Well, if anybody asks us to show up, we will.
There you go.
We're not real picky. It depends on, you know, depends on the gathering and where it is, obviously, and a few other, you know,
logistical issues.
Yeah, logistical things. But, I mean, for the most part, if we can get there, we're more than happy to come. We do all kinds of workshops. I'm a holistic health coach, and Terry has been doing spiritual counseling for years. We both walked very full lives with a lot of experiences, both good and bad. We've both been walking this our individual spiritual paths for, you know, over 15, 20 years. So we have a lot of collected experience, and we draw from all of that, and we also, you know, are there to help people if they want to do couples counseling, if they want to do financial counseling, if they want to do health counseling, if they're feeling they're lost spiritually. We can fill a lot of voids. I do drum therapy. I give people a drum and tell them to, you know, teach them how to, you know, drum. And there's nothing like seeing somebody who came to you troubled, who's been drumming for half an hour, and now they're smiling and they're feeling the connection. So there are lots of things that we can offer and that we do, and it really depends on the need of the festival and the need of the individual.
That's a pretty extensive list of services.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, and let's see, we just spoke at the South Jersey Pagan Pride.
Yep.
And we are going to be at Florida Pagan Gathering. Everybody, come down to Florida and meet us in person and support the Florida Pagan Gathering.
What a great bunch of people who do that event. They've been doing it for over 20 years now. And they know how to put on an event. They're just nice people. And it's a beautiful facility. It's right on a lake. It's just gorgeous.
It is gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in Lake Worth, Florida. So come down and see us in person. We will be there the 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th of November for the Salon event for the Florida Pagan Gathering. Also in March, we are going to be conducting one of the tracks at the Earth-Centered Clergy Conference in Indianapolis. And then, of course, the Sumera Fest, the Ishtar Fest, revisited. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a Sumerian Ren Faire, basically a Sumer affair. And that's going to be going on in June next year. So
first one of its kind, totally unique experience. Come out and be able to say you were the first one who ever went to a Sumerian Ren Faire.
Yeah, that's it. We're, make your Sumerian clothes and come on out. We're going to have a blast.
Yep.
We're going to be at that one, and we're looking forward to it also.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're going to play with mud and stack some bricks maybe.
Yep.
So. So, you know, we do a lot of things. We talk about reconnecting with the earth. And that's a big part of what I go on about. And, you know, getting closer to our food. I come at it from a spiritual perspective. Robin comes at it from a purely health coach kind of perspective. But we find that there's the truth is in the middle. And we are way too removed from our food. And, you know, that's a big part of our ministry is getting people back to their food.
Do you have a, like, your ministry, how do you present it to other people? And how do you consider your ministry within the larger, quote-unquote, pagan community?
Well, that's a mouthful. We're pretty laid back about it, and we probably should be a little bit more out front. But usually people come to us. They meet us at an event, or they know us through a friend, and they'll come and find us. I do a lot of teaching and talking to people via things like FaceTime. Or WebEx, or there's another one. I can't remember the name of it right now. But basically over the computer. We do sessions. As far as fitting into the community, I think that there are a lot of people in the community who do this sort of thing, but not all of them have a lot of schooling. Not all of them have some of the gifts and have had some of the experiences. So whenever you're looking for somebody that you're going to mentor you, allow to mentor you, you really have to look at their lives and see, are they kind of well put together? Do they have like a normal life, you know? Or, you know, what's going on in their life? Is their life somewhat together? Are they fairly well balanced themselves? Because I'm not really sure how people who are not balanced can talk to other people about finding their balance.
Yeah, I mean, if your potential teacher isn't, you know, paying their bills and feeding their kids, then you got to question, what does this person have to offer me?
Yeah.
But, you know, from my perspective, I have a fairly well-paying job. I'm respected in my profession. Travel the world, people around the world pay to have me come talk to them about, you know, fiber optics. Everybody at my work knows who and what I am. And, you know, it's all part of me. It's not that I am a pagan who is doing fiber optics. I'm a guy that does fiber optics that is also pagan. You know, just like someone that you work next to might be Baptist, or someone over there might be Buddhist. We're people going on about life who are pagan and who are pagan speakers and leaders. That's it. I don't separate life, you know, from, you know, mundane from spiritual, because it's all spiritual. And if you walk in a path, it's going to show in every action. How you treat other people, how you interact with authority, with people that over which you have authority. All of that is part of who we are, and it should be a reflection of our path and our connection to the divine. And so there should be no separation. And for me, I try not to have any separation. I wear a pentacle ring on my right hand, and everybody that I interact with sees that ring. I just live my life.
Very good. do you have a defined community, or you just see people coming to you as, you know, generally people?
Both.
Some of both, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I probably have a deeper connection to the New Jersey community because I worked directly in that community for, you know, 15 years with the Mid-Atlantic Pagan Alliance and Woven Roots and organizing events. So when I go to New Jersey, people associate me with those things. But when we go to these other events, people don't know me in that context. So it's more, I guess, it's more of a national thing now, or I shouldn't say national, but people who don't know me, you know, from New Jersey are now getting to know me because I'm going to other events. We have people from Illinois. We have people from Florida. I have people who call me from Oregon. So it's becoming, you know, more diffuse, I guess.
Well, I mean, the radio station certainly has put, you know, my time with the previous network, my time with the tradition that I came up in and becoming very well known there, that got me out into the larger community, having been published in the recent Common Book of Wicca and Witchcraft.
Mm-hmm.
Has my name out there. So I had an area where I was fairly well known. Robin had an area where she was fairly well known. And then together we kind of bridged that, and we worked together. The Indianapolis thing that's coming up in March came through my original contacts. The Florida Pagan Gathering was something that was kind of joint. The Ishtar stuff is something that came from her side and her background. So it all just kind of blends together into one ministry, one outreach.
And for your beliefs, the station very clearly identifies itself with paganism. So is that where you would label your beliefs in terms of what the core of your life is about?
Mine certainly is. And I'm not going to speak for Robin, but I'm pretty sure that I can say that hers is as well. But the radio station, I would very happily have a Christian that was open to interfaith dialogue and could participate in the station without, you know, saying anybody's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I would happily have anyone of any expression of faith have a show as long as they live and function by the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Because I really don't care what somebody calls God. And when I say all manifestations are equally valid, I have to recognize, when I use the word all, that's a pretty damn big word. I have to recognize that that includes Jesus, Jehovah, Yahweh, Allah, Buddha, all the 333,000 gods and goddesses of the Hindu faith, as well as the Hellenic, the Celtic, the Norse, every deity that's ever been called upon. Are all valid manifestations of the divine, and it is not my job to tell someone what to believe.
And which voices, aside from the Olympian one, do you have speaking now on CERN to people?
Right now it is Olympus, you know, your shows, it ends two shows that Robin and I have. We are in negotiations right now with a person that's going to come on and actually do financial success kind of
advice
from a spiritual point of view.
Awesome. We have Prosperity Quest, one of our episode rotations, deals with that also because we feel a lot of people in our community need that type of information. We had Gene Landrum. He's the founder of Chuck E. Cheese. He brought us the Atari 2600, and he did a lot of other amazing things that altered our experience of life. So, I believe that that's very much needed.
And people seem to feel that, you know, admitting to being comfortable or having money, you know, precludes them from being spiritual. Especially, I found that, especially in the pagan community, like, you know, if you are making more than $35,000 a year, all of a sudden you kind of get intimidated or a little bit afraid to, you know, talk about it. And certainly that's not rich, you know, but there seems to be an awful lot of feelings, you know, amongst other pagans where, you know, you have to live in a certain style and in a certain way, and we make assumptions. And there's also this sort of weird reverse prejudice against people who have money in our particular community, which I find rather strange. Because, you know, we always talk about, oh, the community could benefit from this, or it could benefit from that, or we need this, or we need that, and yet we're not willing to embrace people who might be able to help or might be willing to help if asked, you know, nicely, if you will. So, yeah, I think that we have some growth there that certainly needs to be done. And that's part of our hope with having this new show come on the air to talk about money from a spiritual point of view, is to let people know that, you know what, you don't have to have guilt about having money. It's okay. And this is and people who don't have money, listen to the advice, and maybe it will help you, you know, look at money a different way and be able to move forward in a more positive direction for you.
Awesome. So, how can people, aside from on CERN, have access to all the wonderful work that you're doing?
Well, they can contact both Terry and I through our – we have a couple of Facebook pages. There's Little Stone Bridge Pathworkings Facebook page. There's the CERN Facebook page. Both Terry and I have personal Facebook pages. Mine is Robin A. McKean, and Terry is Rev Terry Power HP. So there's four pages right there that you can reach us through. You can also email us at littlestonebridge@yahoo.com. I'm sorry, at Gmail, at gmail.com. Or you can also email us at the CERN email address, which I never remember.
Okay, yeah. It sounded like you were a little garbled there. The email address to reach us both is littlestonebridge@gmail.com. And the radio station's email is surn.org@gmail.com.
And you guys have given a lot of different things you're doing in the months ahead. Is there anything else you haven't told us about that we should know?
We're just working on homesteading kind of stuff and getting closer to our food. You know, made butter over the weekend. We're starting to learn about making our own cheese. We grow a lot of our own food. So, you know, a lot of it is self-education so that we can then turn around and share this with others and help other people to share it and experience it with us. So that's an ongoing kind of thing, whether it's a personal appearance or someone asking me questions about chickens or goats, you know, or making butter, you know, whatever it is. That to me, it's all about getting closer to our food and honoring the divine through the bounty of the earth. And Robin's always talking about eating a rainbow. So, you know, the food and the quality of the food that we eat, the more we do ourselves, the better control we have over the quality, and the closer we are to eating like we're designed to, which will make us ultimately healthier.
You know, one of the things that Terry was sort of astounded at was how easy it is to make butter. People always think, oh, you know, why do we, you know, you got to ask yourself, why do we buy butter? Because it's in the store and it's easy. But it's really not that difficult. Especially
not with a mix master.
I was going to say, not today with having a mix master or even a handheld mixer. You know, you put some cream in a bowl, make sure the bowl is chilled, And hopefully you use a bowl that's not going to react with the cream, so you want a nice stainless steel bowl or a glass bowl. And you just throw the cream in there and mix it until it turns into butter. I mean, it'll start to separate. It'll turn into whipped cream first, and then you keep going. You keep mixing it, you'll see it'll start to separate in the bowl. The liquid will come out of the butter, and you'll have all the milk, like the buttery, milky looking stuff. And when it's done, it'll start to clump up on the mixer. You just pour out the liquid. And then actually literally take running fresh cold water and rinse the butter off, and you're done. After mm-hmm. that, it's just pressing it into a form and wrapping it in, you know, wax paper or parchment paper or whatever you want to wrap it in. Stick it in a Tupperware, however you want to store it in your refrigerator, and you're done. You can add salt at that point if you'd like to or not. It depends. Salt is considered a preservative. If you're going to add it to butter, it'll make it last a little longer in the refrigerator.
And we're used to the taste.
Yeah, we are. Most of us are used to the taste of salt in butter.
So I took some sea salt and I ground it up in a mortar and pestle so that it was a smooth powder. I kneaded it into the about a pound of butter. You know, a quart of cream makes about a pound of butter. And that was it. I put it in the mixer. It was about 20 minutes, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just kneaded it, just spread it out with a piece of muslin cloth and pressed it out flat, salted it, folded it over a couple of times, pressing it out, sprinkling in some salt, wrapped it up, and put it in the fridge. I had some with my lunch today, and it was absolutely awesome.
Yeah, I love homemade
butter. Fresh butter in half hour. So
all exciting stuff, and beyond the festivals, beyond the workshops, online and in person, beyond the radio station, where do you see your ministry going in the years to come?
I think both Terry and I are very devoted to wanting to help people. I really think that's really at the root of anybody's spiritual pursuit in this life. It's to improve yourself first and know yourself. But after that, it's to take the knowledge that you've learned and the improvements you've made with yourself and reach out to others who are in pain or who are struggling and say, listen, I was there. I know what you're going through. And just like we do with spiritual teaching, you validate people's experiences and you can guide them and show them a way forward if they want to choose it, if they really want it. Because you can never, you know, force people to do something they're not ready to do, but you can let them know that you're there when they are ready. So I think, you know, more and more individual counseling and being able to, you know, one person at a time improve the world. That's really, I think, the mission that I'm on anyway.
Yeah, well, I have been told that I cannot not teach. You know, I mean, everything I do is teaching. And my favorite question is, what have we learned from this? You know, but my mission is to be there to share what I have learned, the good stuff and the bad stuff, the cool stuff and the pains. All of those have lessons attached to them. And I tell people all the time, learn from my mistakes so you can go out and make a whole new set for yourself. Don't be boring. Don't make the same mistakes. Go make new ones. And that only comes from growing and learning and listening to people that have been there and done that. And I still listen to a lot of people that have been there and done that and hope to learn a few things that I don't have to do. You know?
I tell people that myself, that basically learn from my mistakes. That's why I'm sharing them with you.
But I will tell you one thing, and there's if people leave with one thought, the idea is to experience the divine. Practice something.
Mm-hmm.
Do something. There are no wrong answers. Certainly don't call me and ask for answers, because I will give you opinions. You have your own answers. You have to seek them. But you never learn anything sitting on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
You got to get out there and live it.
You got to get up there and strike out.
That's it. So that's the big lesson right there. Just go out and do.
And the other important thing is that it's never easy. And if you look at the tales of heroes, you know, they ascended to the heavens, yes, but they also descended to the underworld. So there will be good times, there will be bad times. There will be times when nothing seems to be happening. There will be times when everything seems to be happening at once. And that's all part of the adventure.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed it is.
Well, thank you so very much for being on the show and also for giving us this opportunity to develop Voice of Olympus and share our voice with people. I look forward to continuing this conversation in another show in the not-too-distant future.
I look forward to it as well, and thank you and Athena for being a part of what we're doing here, having your voice and sharing it.
Absolutely.
It's all part of the master plan to get people talking to each other instead of at each other. And you guys are a part of that, and it's greatly appreciated.
And we're greatly honored. Joyous journeys, and we'll talk soon.
I look forward to it. Have a good night.
Have a good night, guys.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow, today was a pretty thought-provoking show. What are we doing in the days ahead, Athena?
Well, coming soon, our new e-radio show on Blog Talk Network will be the Pride of Olympus. On Saturday, October 15th, between 1 and 2:30, Hercules Invictus will host the Seven Heavens workshop and meditation at the Amber Dragon in Branchville, New Jersey. You can also join Hercules Invictus at the Creskill Public Library at 7 o'clock p.m., in Exploring Past Lives, and that'll be on Thursday, October 27th.
Okay, and our next show is going to be Living Legends, Brad and Sherry Steiger. Brad and Sherry have written tons of books, and I've been following Brad's career for most of my life, actually. And also our Mount Olympus Interfaith Dialogue continues with the honoring of Athena by our good friend Lionheart Thomas Ponton. It will be great to speak with him again. And where can folks go for information about us, Athena?
Well, we have several different ways you can get in touch with us. One is at our website, which is www.herculesinvictus.net. For contact and community, you can visit us on Facebook at Hercules Invictus, Mythic Atlantis, or the Voice of Olympus. We are also available for Olympian workshops, mythic activities, as well as epic special events and appearances.
Thank you once again for joining us. We wish you all well, and may you all have joyous journeys. This is Hercules Invictus signing out.
Good night.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.